Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. You know, throughout my life, I've learned that so many times before I can learn something new, I have to first unlearn something else, something that often gets in the way of my personal development. And that can mean letting go of some deeply held beliefs. Unfortunately, many people have a difficult time letting go of old beliefs because it is just too risky. But that is not the case with Adam Hall, today's guest on the next chapter with Charlie. Adam's new book, Divine Genius, The Unlearning Curve, takes us deep into the land of unlearning as a means to embrace different and even more helpful truths. Adam has a fascinating personal story that we will find out all about, and it's seeking deep life changes necessary for living a most fulfilled life. His story, which calls for a nourishing and adventurous journey into the ancient regions of South America, Peru, Brazil, a land of great mystery and learning. And I just can't wait to learn from Adam. So with that, let's get Adam on the air. Adam Hall, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
You bet. Thank you, Charlie. It's wonderful to be here with you and your audience today, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for your kind response. You know, I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today about discovering your own divine genius, and I'm curious to find out how you define divine genius and also the important life adjustments that come with that discovery, because there are lots of impacts in searching for and implementing a divine genius, are there not?
Oh, many that we can explore, and there's a few that we can really hone in on today, because as you said, to let go of something, in particular living from belief for a trauma, is what ultimately will set us free into that next chapter.
Yes, that is so true. And I want to, before we get into your teachings, I think it would be really helpful to know a little bit about your history and how you got into divine genius and study with shamans and the wise teachers of South America. So I think what I'd like to do to start the show this week, I'd like for you to tell me, just for currently, so we get an idea what you do now, not what you used to do, what might an average week look like in the life of Adam Hall?
Well, this week I've been very busy with a summit that I'm co-hosting with my good friends Steve Farrell and Neil Donna Walsh up at Humanities Team. And they've assembled a magnificent program around global oneness, around awakening our consciousness, and how every single one of us has wisdom that can create impact in the world. So I've been working to produce that event, of which I'm hosting some wonderful panels that's still going on. So that's alive with creativity and creating content for my work, my teachings, obviously sharing the book that was just published, Divine Genius, The Unlearning Curve. I'm also just working on another summit that I'm doing coming up in December. That's the Earthkeeper Summit, and doing that with Deepak and Eckhart and all, you know, those kind of who's who. In the consciousness space. Yeah, that's, so I was just producing that, filming that, actually a little feeling the filming of that. So it's been a very creative week, more than I typically would do. But other than that, I work with some clients, because I'm deeply passionate about supporting leaders and people that are intentional about creating more impact in the world, social impact. And that impact may be in education for some, or maybe in the environment. It could be in business. So I work with folks that are interested in really aligning their mission and their passion and their purpose to create impact. So I've been doing that a bit this week, and other than that, just looking at some land up here where I live, because I love the land, and seeing where maybe I can grow some food and some gardens. And
in Santa Barbara?
Up here in Santa Barbara, California. Yeah. So it's been a busy week of content creation. It's been a week of connection with some of my clients, as well as maybe looking at some land here to grow some food and do some things that I love to do on the earth. So that's a little bit of, well, this week for that matter, and that's pretty typical of most of my weeks. Other than that, I begin every day at sunrise with some meditation and just dropping into reflection and seeing what might come forth for the day. So that's kind of a day in the life of Adam Hall, so to speak.
Perfect. Now this has and I may have this age incorrect, but I for some reason have the age of 42. But that you seem to pursue your next chapter and your life at around that age did not look at all like this life now, did it? You have not always been a spiritual seeker and a seeker of unity with the environment and with the cosmos. You had quite a different life before this, didn't you?
Completely different. As a matter of fact, I refer to that as my 1.0 version, and this now living my best life now in the 2.0 version. And I certainly believe that's available to all of us, because the beauty about being human is we can transform our lives and we can regenerate our lives. But to your point, Charlie, about the next chapter, the next story, I was living a life of what I describe as an earth conqueror. And it was more the world of win-lose proposition, dog-eat-dog, live by that law of the jungle. When the sun comes up, whether you're a lion or gazelle, you better run like hell.
But that was in pursuit of the American dream, was it not? Was that?
That certainly was in pursuit of that. And I built the big house over in Malibu, and the clubs and the cars and the all those accoutrements that go along with pursuit and of the dream. But ultimately, it left me with an empty feeling. It was Tums in the morning and tequila at night. Something was missing, even though I had three beautiful, amazing daughters. Believe it or not, I have five granddaughters now. Wow.
Yeah, I saw the photo on your website.
They're just such great gifts in my life. But ultimately, that was something that I realized, something's amiss. Why do I feel not so peaceful? What makes me stressed out and angry? Why am I just kind of going off the handle here, or charging 60, 70 hours a week? There's got to be something more to it. And that's what began started the journey into saying, my gosh, there's got to be another way, because this life is killing me, and it was a life of dis-ease, not only disease in a biological sense, but
sure,
it's disease in terms of
sure
a psychological sense,
sure,
if you know what I mean. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so that's where I was, and that's what said, okay, wait a second, let's see what wants to happen in a way that's more fulfilling and joyful and unconditional, instead of a conditional life existence that's based on money or another person or anything, but to live in oneness and live sovereign, so to speak, free.
Now,
is
this something that just sort of crept up on you, that you felt it as time went along, or was there a significant event or a series of events that said, man, I got to change, you know, this is not working, or is that just something that grew on you over time?
Well, it was building up. Like anything in our lives, you know, even seemingly that innocuous little lie or that argument or that, in some cases in my world, in business litigation, you know, all those kind of things begin to build up. And they often result in an early end of life. And almost always lead to a life that's not fulfilling of one's life's mission and purpose. So it was building up, but the fact of the matter is when I was driving to my offices from my home in Malibu at the time down to Brentwood there in Los Angeles, in West Los Angeles, and sun was coming up, of course, over the bay there, Santa Monica Bay. But a dog ran out in the road right as I was on the phone with a banker. I was doing a deal with a Wall Street banker, very large transaction, and it was not turning out the way I wanted to at the closing table, so to speak. And I got super crazy, wildly upset, and a bit of rage in me. And then the dog, and I thought, you know, I was having a heart attack. And literally panting for breath and pulled over and ultimately realized, well, wait a second, the writing's on the wall here. And that began an inquiry into the next little baby step that I took to say, well, wait a second, my life is not working out the way I'd like it to.
One question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. No, that just precipitated, you know, that proverbial, let's call it midlife crisis, but it's really a midlife awakening, so to speak. That, let's go to the next chapter type of thing. Although at the time, I didn't know it that way or wasn't conscious of it that way, but it was time, if you know what I mean. It's time to make a move. Otherwise, you know, the same old thing is just going to sink that ship.
Just before we go on to the next step, I'm wondering, was your family in lock sync, or were they just content with the way you were living life at that time?
They were very content. As a matter of fact, my thoughts and things that were going on for me around exploring a deeper relationship with my ex and the therapy that we were going through really ultimately became a threat to her. She saw it as a clear threat to our way of life, only precipitated, you know, more difficulty and more acrimony and ultimately led me to having an affair, to really moving away from a deeper intimacy with my wife, who didn't want to take that journey, wasn't interested. It wasn't her journey in that respect. And if you're not taking a journey with somebody you love or somebody you want to spend your life with, you know, together, then, you know, the soul says, you know, no way. I've got to find my way. Otherwise, it's just like walking around kind of like with soul loss, not feeling alive anymore.
So it sounds like you had some sort of soul journey already in mind. Is that at the time you were thinking of going to South America, or was that before that time?
I had no idea where the hell I was going. And that's what even made it more terrifying, because there wasn't a plan. I lived by business plans, you know, the more controlled type of life existence. Instead of, you know, the innocence or the magic of the unknown, as we would say in on the path of awakening, our spiritual path or conscious path, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is for you. And so, no, the answer was no. I began reading. I began a deep yoga practice. I began connecting and spending a lot of time in nature, starting to listen to myself, listen to my heart, So it catapulted me into a journey that ultimately led me to Peru and into the desert Southwest of working with indigenous cultures, Native Americans, shamans, keepers, wisdom keepers, studied Zen and Buddhism and, you know, so many great traditions out there, so many wonderful works and that are available to us. But ultimately, I gravitated to these ancient traditions that were very quantum in their teachings. In other words, they were very fiery oriented. In other words, if you put a fire under a crucible and you turn it up and you're in the crucible, then you're going to get transformed. In other words, you're going to die and you're going to come back again. And although at the time I didn't know if I was, but I did. And essentially it turned out to be not only the next chapter in my life, but a whole new book
right.
of my life.
Right.
And that's
right.
Where I'm at today.
You know, several people that are on this kind of journey seem to take the Eastern mystical journey, you know, seem to, you know, acquaint themselves with either Buddhism or the Tao Te Ching or sometimes Hinduism. What in the world ever took you to the jungles of Brazil, other than it sounds fun as hell? What was it about that particular spiritual life approach that seemed to match your personality?
It's a good question, because I was studying different traditions, including the Tao Te Ching, which I still read and spend a lot of time with extensively to this day, as well as A Course in Miracles, which I've been a student and teacher of for the past 18 years. But
oh, really? 18 years, kind of when it began.
18 years, and that's more traditional Gnostic type
right.
of Christianity, and
right.
you spoke about some of these things in my understanding of your path, Charlie, but ultimately, they were more, in my opinion, what I was finding more purely philosophical in nature, more mental and intellectual in nature. And I resonated more deeply with coming into a deeper connection with heart,
yep.
Both mind
yep.
and heart.
Yep.
And
yep.
in what I found is that earth-based traditions of ancient cultures, be it the Mayans or the Incans or the indigenous people from all over the world, they were connected to the earth, and they were connected to nature, and that resonated for me as a pathway, although a non-traditional path. I grew up in the Protestant church, and it sure as wasn't going to be that. That wasn't for me by mm-hmm. any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But I resonated deeply with these traditions, because they have powerful rites of passage and initiatory rites.
Very strong.
You know, those took me to the jungle. That took me into doing the ayahuasca. That took me into the mountains at 14,000-15,000 feet. And it was epic. It was an epic type of adventure. And adventure's in my DNA. I love spiritual adventure that gets me back into original root cultures and philosophy and wisdom teachings that apply now more than ever, is what I'm finding.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like the spirituality that you found in the Peruvian and Brazilian culture and in South America in general, those are more like teaching. Well, the known religions of the world, we're finding out about religions. In the process that you took, it seems to me it's learning how to live within and through a tradition. It's not learning about a tradition. It's not facts and data and practice this and practice that. It's about immersing one's full inner core self with this philosophy or with this teaching. Is it? Am I anywhere near ballpark on that?
Well, no, that's really well said, and I like how you've brought an integral approach to a tradition and a philosophical tradition, but these are also wisdom traditions. And the beauty of the shamanic traditions is that they're prolific. There's the men and women, the medicine men and women who are the shamans of throughout the millennium are across culture. They transcend the culture as we know it. In other words, there are many, many shamans in the world today in various different cultures. But when you get down below that surface, when you get into the inner layers of shamanism, you come into a way of life. You come into a conscious lifestyle of living in oneness with the earth.
And the earth is a big deal, is it not? I know it's a big deal in your life, but in this whole tradition, the earth is significant. I know in the Mayan culture and Pachamama that the earth is central to the philosophical or religious positions.
Well, most certainly. And, you know, we live by the saying that essentially is, as the earth goes, so do I. As I go, so goes the earth. And I'll be darned, we're going to be finding out a lot more about that.
We are.
As we move more and more into great earth changes and climate changes. But these shaman, these men and women, it wasn't as much about, for example, what is rain? It's about making it rain. It was not simply about moving water down through a valley, through an irrigation ditch. It was more about engineering feats of bringing water up into the mountainsides to grow quinoa or other crops.
Right. And they have all the terraced gardens.
Pardon?
I said, and they have all the terraced gardens that I've noticed when I've been in Peru. And
Yes. And the building the temples. These are engineering and technological feats that we have yet to fully grasp.
Yeah, done by the stars. Today. It's amazing. You know, my trip to Peru, I mean, it was so enlightening. Tell me, I'm going to change this a little bit because I'm curious. We're using a word a lot. And then I'm going to get into the practical applications. But we're using a word a lot that I'm not sure everybody has an idea of what it is, but I'm not sure people have a collective understanding on what is a shaman.
It's a bit of an unknown to most. And a shaman, most simply, is an intermediary between the finite world of form, our body, the earth, the world in which we live in, which is a 3D world. The shaman is the bridge between the infinite world, the unseen world, the five-dimensional or greater dimensional world that we know as the quantum field. So the shaman acts as an intermediary between the infinite and the finite worlds, the world of form and the world of formless. And in the experience, in the journey that the shaman does when they work with someone, they work in a place that's transcendent purely of the physical body. In other words, they work in the energy body, the ethereal body that is connects us in mind, not brain or heart or any of our biological, physiological nature. They connect us through our psycho-spiritual nature into a transcendent field of mind in connection to the quantum field. And the shaman acts as an intermediary to bring forth the medicine, which is can be anything from removal of energy that has existed within our energy body, our field of energy, to a shift of our perception as to, say, why was I physically abused when I was younger, or whatever it may be. So that classic Einstein saying that we can't solve the problem, Charlie, from where the place where the problem was created, the shaman helps us solve the problem not from the place it was created, but helps us solve the problem from a place that gives us a new perspective on where it was created. Therefore, the problem is solved, not in the problem, but from a transcendent space. And hopefully that makes some sense. It's a little bit.
Yeah, no, it does.
But that's the idea. Yeah.
And it sort of sets the tempo for what I want to talk about next, Annette. And that has a lot to do in order to embrace and engage with all this. There is a certain unlearning curve that has to happen, or else is that not part of the process that you use then?
It's most certainly a part of the process, and let me share a little bit more.
Well, let's hold on that, because what I want to do is I want to take a break, and then we will come back from the break, and we're going to go into what is divine genius, the unlearning curve, 13 universal wisdom teachings. I want to talk all about your book and all about the learnings that can help impact our listeners' life.
Cool.
Hi there, you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie Hedges, and my very special guest today is Adam Hall, who is an adventurer, a life searcher, and has gone from an exceptionally successful life of, you know, the big house, the big car, the trophy family, the golf courses, the partying, didn't find satisfaction from that, and oddly enough, was led through research and personal introspection to Peru and Brazil, to shamanism and oneness with the earth, oneness with ourself, with our internal self. And he wrote a book that's titled Divine Genius, The Unlearning Curve. And I want to flesh out that book and those teachings to see what can each of us learn from Adam's experience? Because so many of us have indeed experienced that dissatisfaction with the American way and, you know, our dream. And I'm a big advocate of the American way and the American dream until it becomes to take over and it becomes the only dream. So, Adam, tell me about the work you've done that led up to this work, The Divine Genius, The Unlearning Curve.
Well, it's been a powerful journey for the last 18 years, Charlie, and ultimately I decided I needed to crack open another part of my consciousness. I'd been living in really trapped in the left brain, the analytical masculine brain, and so my journey into not only with medicinal medicines, which I believe can be supportive, but are not necessary. But my journey into creativity and my right brain and how I can explore my expression as a writer, as an author. I have another book coming out next month around abundance and to endless scarcity and lack in our lives. But ultimately, what I decided to do is to begin to explore other parts of my life, my connection with nature, my connection with myself, And then that connection with myself, I felt into a place that really felt most unloved. The places within me that carried shame of not being worthy or not being good enough.
And we're all haunted with that, are we not? I mean, is that not a common, I don't know if human condition, but it is certainly a Western tradition that we are caught into.
It is a Western tradition, yeah.
Because so many expectations are put upon us that we can't possibly, maintain or live up to those expectations. And so we're left lost.
We're left not feeling good enough or worthy. And,
right.
You know, like you shared, it's predominant in Western culture. I mean, we live in a culture where over two-thirds of us often feel lonely. That's just not the case in Eastern traditions. We see, the data around our depression and our suicides and our overdoses. You know, not to get over into that, but my journey was I wasn't going to continue down the same path. So it began the seeking, which ultimately has now subsided and has come to an end because I realize that it's all just perfect and I'm right exactly where I need to be. Doesn't mean I'm not going to be learning.
You're there for now.
I know very little. I know really very little at all, to be quite frank with you. But ultimately, it was how can I be of greater service to my children and the children of the world, and also to people that are in leadership that want to create more impact. So that began the journey of having to let go of those. It's like those old chapters. It's like those stories that say, you know what, that's baggage.
Yeah.
That is heavy stuff.
Yeah.
That's junk in the trunk. That's weighing down on my psyche, my unconscious. I feel heavy in my life. I don't feel the peace. I'm in relationship with others and myself that's not serving the greater good. So that was an intention that I made and that I've been living by and practicing, every day of my life. In a sense, you're a deep practitioner yourself and in your own journey, are you not?
I am, very much. And, and that led me to a question that's going to go back. I said I didn't want to go back, but I do want to go back because you were talking about a left and right brain, hemispheric brain thought, and the masculine, the feminine, the images versus the data. And then you had mentioned when you were in Peru, you partook of plant medicine, which was ayahuasca. Did that help you make that transition from left brain to right brain?
Most certainly did, and amongst other things, but primarily through clearing away some key obstacles. And it was a quickening taking the medicine, and I have a lot of thoughts and caution around it as much as potentially can be.
It's become a hip, cool thing, and it's just another sense of getting high, and it is not a medication or not a medicine that you want to get high on. It's not.
No, this is for people that are in ceremony with the masters, that it's brewed and comes from people who know it. It carries powerful energy that has both light.
Yeah, prayed over the whole process of manufacturing it.
That's right. So that helped to crack open the left brain. It helped to really unwind the obstacles that kept me from my right brain, I should say. And that was really about the beginning of the unlearning.
Yeah, that's what I want you to unpack for me.
Yeah.
Because that is the beginning of the unlearning of all these habits that we have been raised with that need to be reconsidered and sometimes trashed and replaced by something else. I hate to use the word trashed, but at least set aside.
Well, this is a yes and, Charlie. Yes, it is an unlearning of all of that those traumas, belief systems, familiar imprint, cultural imprint. Think of all those things that layer onto us and how we go to the world to function in one way, but maybe it's just not our authentic self or truth. In other words, I was like an imposter in the world at the time, although I had no idea about it. But it's not, unlearning is really simple. This is an outrageous thought, how simple it is. It's unlearning one thought, only one thought. And that is the one thought that said, I can be separate from nature. I can be separate from spirit. I can be separate from the quantum field. I can be separate from you. I'm a body. I'm separate. That's the thought of the ego mind.
Yeah, and that's in my Christian background, that's against creation intent. Creation intent is forced to be relational, and that was that's the way we're created.
There you have it, and the whole idea of the divine genius, the unlearning curve of the book is, you don't need your priest, your guru, or anything else. You are the priest. You are the guru. We do have the power within ourselves to unlearn that one problem that I've identified and others have identified very clearly. And in that release of that thought system, then we awaken, and I awaken, I should say, to a whole new perspective, a whole new life, a whole new way of seeing the world that was radically different than that Earth conqueror, that Adam 1.0.
Describe that new life to me.
The power of it.
Describe that new life to me. What does that entail?
It entails breathing softly and gently, and it entails being able to allow moments of potential stress in the world. That maybe there's something that's very upsetting with my daughter that allows me to just not engage in the drama or the co kind of conspiracy of in her story, but to come to it, the world and others in a very loving way, a way that is full of compassion. So in some ways it feels like a surrender, because we're surrendering the need to control events in our life. But in another way, it's completely freeing and liberating of that, because it allows the divine, the genius of the universe, this incredible force, not a person or a place or some god or any of this kind of stuff, but allows the magnificence of the universe that we call the quantum field to come through us, to come into us, to penetrate us. And it allows that to be a fuller expression of the love in my life and the peace in my life. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't have moments of upset or challenge, or of course I do. What the difference is my perception of it and what I do about it, and more importantly, what I don't do about it. And the latter is the key, is the non-engagement, and most often, the non-engagement, that detachment from it, allows it to resolve by itself without any control or any need to do anything. So that's what the world is looking like today for me. And things happen very quickly. If I'm aligning and I want to manifest or have relations in my life or bring more creative people into my life, it's a place that is fuller in its abundance of creativity, of peace. It's unconditional. It's not a conditioned life experience. It's an unconditioned life experience. It's an unlearned life experience. So it brings the magic and the innocence of the child. And I'm learning a lot from the magic and the innocence of my 1-year-old granddaughter Jada. She's showing me the way forward.
You know, I once read recently, well, not recently, it's been within the last 3 or 4 years, But I guess that's recently on 72, so I can count 3 or 4 years as recently. But that the universe actually is complicit in assisting us attain wholesome and worthy desires, that the universe longs for us to be at one with it and longs for us to live a life that is not so much set on those ego-related conditions, but much more on service-related conditions. And I'm a big believer in service, and I think we find so much from that. Any thoughts on that?
It's the key. As a matter of fact, our neurological programming, should we wire ourselves into a state of oneness with our environment, hence you can look at the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton in epigenetics, if we wire ourselves into that oneness, the universe is conspiring to support us in exactly what you're talking about.
I like that verb, conspiring.
The universe is whole and not differentiating of this seemingly different life. You know, here we are separate from the universe, detached from the universe. Well, why the hell would I want to be separate and detached from the universe and the quantum field when it holds the entire capacity to fulfill health, wellness, joy, abundance? Well,
I'm created from it. I'm created from the earth. I'm part of the earth.
The minerals, the waters, the whole thing is integral in its nature. So the power of ourselves to come into a resonant field in our four bodies, the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual bodies, Charlie, with the quantum field, the quantum body, as we integrate fully into that place in our own balance and with it, then what the universe is, what it has in its totality, is what we are and what we have. So imagine that. It's mind-boggling what that potential is and what that is. Nothing is impossible. Everything is possible in that place of being, in that way of living life. So I'm finding in my practice and journey to doing that, as long as I can get out of my own damn way, and there's some key obstacles that prevent that, but I'm teaching and sharing those with my clients all the time to remove those, because that will get us into a place of equanimity, and equanimity is peace, and peace is unconditional love and everything else.
You know what may be a bit of irony. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but the mystic Christians of the late medieval time period advocated the same philosophy with God, that God is not a separate, that we are not separate, detached from God. But throughout, I can name a ton of scriptures that support this. But we are built to be one with God, to be at one with God in one's desire, and to love other people and to serve other people in the unity with the God self. You don't hear that a lot from religions today, and yet that is a core essential biblical principle. And so it's not unlike what you're advocating as a quantum theory or the shamanistic approach to life, that this ideal that we are separate from the universe, that's one of the core learnings, is that I am not separate, but that I am one with the rest of the universe. That's a core growth learning that many people in Western culture, especially in the United States, never get a chance to learn because of our proclivity for individualism. And though I'm a staunch individualist, but I'm not I'm detached from certain harmful elements that control, that I don't allow them to control my emotions or my psyche. Yet at the same time, I'm a total devotee of oneness, essential goodness with other people, and essential goodness with the planet. I know those sounds like...
Drop the mic on that one. We're saying exactly. Amen. Amen to that. The unified field connected with that quantum field, the unified of the quantum field in the biofield. The biofield meaning our humanness, our human presence on the earth, the integral nature of that with the quantum field, the unified nature of that is the oneness and totality. And many established religions, as many of us know, have found, want to be the intermediary,
right,
between these, right, fields, and they want to be a gatekeeper. And I practice that mystical Christian entity as well, where there is no intermediary between you and that field.
Look
and
at what Jesus called himself. Jesus called himself a shepherd. He called himself a guide. He didn't call himself an intermediary. You know, he was labeled that after the crucifixion, but prior to that, he was a shepherd. I have two brief questions before we wrap it up, but one could be a long question, but, you know, I just would like an overview. You have in your book, you have 13 universal wisdom teachings. I read somewhere that you view the first as maybe the most important. Could you, I don't know if you agree, if you know, anything you read online, you're never really sure of. Would you agree? And if you do, what is that of the 13 universal teachings that were taught to you by the shaman in Peru? What is that first and important teaching?
Well, there are 13 wisdom teachings that are revealed that I share in the book, The Divine Genius. These are universal wisdom teachings. They're golden wisdoms that are original teachings that throughout the millennium. And I share them in the context of how they're applicable today in our lives in real time. And we don't have time today to explore much of that, but the first teaching that is there is true forgiveness. I practice of forgiveness, as I put forth in the book, is a forgiveness practice that sets us free from our stories of our limiting beliefs, the things that keep us stuck in our traumas.
So is it forgiveness of self?
Of course it begins with forgiveness itself and others, but it begins by understanding that it's not about denying what has gone on in our life. It's about no longer playing the victim card, no longer being the judge and the jury and the guilt of that way that we think about forgiveness. So we must move through these stories and these events and these beliefs, Charlie, through a practice of true forgiveness. And we forgive ourselves and others, not for what happened, but for what did not happen. And what did not happen is we erred in our perception that we are separate from one another. Because if you think about it, in oneness, in that connection of interconnectivity, which is spiritual law, it's biological and physical law, all law transcends into a place of interconnectivity and oneness, there is only love there. We cannot live in fear or hatred in that place. And it allows us to be free of these events that guide almost every single thought, about 95%+ of our thoughts every day from our past. Who wants to live in the past? Why not live in the present, where we can emerge into our greater truth, the greater authenticity of who we are and our interconnectivity. Hopefully that made some sense.
Yeah, that's, I so concur. I so concur. Whatever we're doing today prepares us for tomorrow. And so as we're disassociating with that egoistic self and becoming detached as the, you know, Christian of Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, we'll talk about detaching from the ego, from the negative ego. Not that there's a positive ego, the negative ego that, you know, goes for my, I call them the three P's, power, prestige, and possessions. That, you know, we're always going for those to try to substitute for the deepest longing, which is love. Mm. So I so concur with you. And that's going to lead me to my final question. So we've spent nigh on to close to an hour in discussing finding a life apart from one that's seeking all the toys in life to one that's seeking unity, divinity, that's seeking kindness to people, that is seeking goodness to earth and oneness with earth. And then we live a quite simple and quite fulfilled life. My question is this, and this is the most difficult question I've asked you. What would you suggest to listeners who are maybe for the first or second time, or maybe they've heard this before, but they're saying, man, I need to check this out. What are first steps, Adam? What leads a person to begin to pursue a different sort of life?
Well, it begins with that curiosity, and it often begins for most of us, unfortunately, with pain and suffering, or a tragedy, a divorce, or an illness, something that pushes us into a transformational experience, and therefore we become seekers. But ultimately, it's not simply about endless seeking. It's about finding the indelible truth of who we are and the gifts that have already been given in our life. And I share with clients that I work with, it's really begins with showing up. So whoever is tuning in today is showing up. And that is a big step. And as I walk this path, and as we walk it together, Charlie, as we move through the different chapters of our life or the process of letting go of all no longer serves us, we become invited into a deeper practice. And that practice is one that I have found through a meditative practice, through a contemplative practice, of course, through all the traditional things that spiritual teachings and our teachers teach us in the world. But ultimately, it brings us back into a place of interconnectivity where we are invited to be back in the garden. We were never thrown out of the garden. And that garden awaits us all, and it's not anywhere external. It's lying right within us now. So I honor everyone who is taking those steps, that is on that journey of learning and unlearning the thought of separation, to continue those steps and to continue with the curiosity. And of course, life is way too important to take seriously. Let's have some fun. It's a beautiful, beautiful world we live in. And this is an extraordinary time that I'm finding. And I thank you for having me today, inviting me into the conversation with you, Charlie. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance. And I wish you all the best and Godspeed.
How kind of you. Those are very kind words. I too very much enjoyed this time. Such a fun and challenging and thought-provoking conversation. I really appreciate your journey and what you're trying to do. I think that's great. Now, if people want to get a hold of you, do they get a hold of you at your website? Is that the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is adamhall.solutions.
Yeah, and
Adam
I will put those Hall in the show notes.
Dot solutions.
Yeah, I'll put those in the show notes. www.adamhall.solutions. I'll put a link to the book and wish you the very best. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Be well. Take care, brother.